Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Decatur, on track to beat cancer. Community joins woman for walks as she navigates cancer journey, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Ever since she was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in July, Tina Cunningham has been the motivation for friends, families, and even strangers. The 52-year-old Decatur resident has been walking the MacArthur High School track to stay healthy and encouraged. "I've always walked my little strolls, been doing that for years," she said. "Now it seemed like it had more purpose." Part of her motivation has been to stay healthy as she goes through her journey. So Cunningham recorded her walks and posted the videos on her Facebook page. "My plan was just to go live, just to inform family and friends what I was going through," Cunningham said, "just to get it all out there at once." As the weeks have gone by, others have been joining her during her Monday evening and Saturday morning walks at the Decatur Memorial Hospital campus, as well as the MHS track. That was the start of her motivational journey. However, she wasn't the only person to find encouragement. "It turned into something way bigger," she said. The walks continue to grow, with nearly 50 people, both men and women, joining her for each week. However, approximately 100 participants, including walkers and the healthcare vendors, joined her during the Walk with Tina event Monday evening. "It's fun, it's fellowship," said her friend Shauna Mays. "But more so, it's to bring awareness to breast cancer." Cunningham's first 10-minute video persuaded women to schedule overdue mammograms and doctor's visits, all while advocating for their own health. Then they started sharing their testimonies, Cunningham said. Ruth Anderson, 63, has been walking with Cunningham since the first route. "I just like exercising, but it's for a good cause," she said, "and Tina is my friend." During the walk around the DMH course, the friends would discuss their health and family. "We did a moment of prayer," Anderson said. "We took pictures and just had conversations." The goal during the walks is to stay on course for at least a mile. The friends would learn that many didn't know much about the importance of breast health. "There were so many that have never done a mammogram," Anderson said. The latest Monday walk brought together not only loved ones, but people she only recently met, and even strangers. Health agencies and other vendors wanted to join the cause as well by greeting the walkers and providing information, including how to do a self-exam, registrations for mammograms, and spiritual support. The timing was ideal. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Sonia Chargua, community health consultant with Memorial Health, attended the event to help others like Cunningham. "When it comes to African American women, it reminds Black women the importance of getting their mammogram," she said. "But it also calls out all cancers." According to Chargua, cancer is the leading cause of death in Macon County. "When it comes to African Americans, they often have the highest rates," she added. "This raises awareness that we should get screened." Proven medical physician Dr. Dana Ray emphasized the importance of taking care of one's own health and making it a priority, especially for women. "We tend to put everybody else at the top of the list, and we put ourselves at the bottom of the list," she said. "We want to flip that a little bit, putting yourself on the list, at least." Ray is a Decatur native, so I'm a familiar face to talk about some of those scary things, including breast cancer, in terms where it's understandable, she said. The healthcare providers encourage others to take care of their health, just like Cunningham does. During the experience, she has become a go-to person for basic advice, as well as a morale booster. "She just offered the walks to the community, those who want to come out and walk with her," Mays said. "Tina is very active." Throughout the journeys, Cunningham is praising God. "I'm thankful for God keeping me," she said during one of her posted walks. I just want to be a blessing to other people. Funds from the Walk with Tina event will go towards breast cancer awareness agencies. To be a resource to other women who have breast cancer, who may not necessarily have the same resources or information that Tina has, Mays said. Cunningham's friends have used her positive energy for their own encouragement. Tina has this positive attitude, Anderson said. With her being so strong, will-minded, she's going to be just fine. Cunningham expects to be finished with all of her medical procedures by the end of the year. She admits the negative reactions to the chemotherapy have been minimal. I've been in really good health, she said. Government. Shutdown puts U.S. in precarious situation. Third federal funding lapse under Trump White House. By Lisa Mascaro, Mary Claire Jelonek, and Stephen Groves, Associated Press, Washington. A vote to end the government shutdown hours after it began failed Wednesday, as Democrats in the Senate held firm to the party's demands to fund health care subsidies that President Donald Trump and Republicans refused to provide. The tally showed cracks in the Democrats' resolve, but offered no breakthrough. Blame was being cast on all sides on the first day of the shutdown. The White House and Congress failed to strike an agreement to keep programs and services open, throwing the country into a new cycle of uncertainty. Roughly 750,000 federal workers were expected to be furloughed, with some potentially fired by Trump's Republican administration. Many offices will be shuttered, perhaps permanently, as the president vows to do things that are irreversible to punish Democrats. Trump's deportation agenda is expected to run full speed ahead, while education, environmental, and other services sputter. The economic fallout is expected to ripple nationwide. I certainly pray they will come to their senses, House Speaker Mike Johnson said, flanked by GOP leaders at the Capitol. This is the third time Trump has presided over a federal funding lapse, and the first since his return to the White House this year. His record underscores the polarizing divide over budget priorities in a political climate that rewards hardline positions rather than more traditional compromises. The Democrats picked this fight, which was unusual for the party that prefers to keep government running, but their voters are eager to challenge the president's second-term agenda. Democrats are demanding funding for health care subsidies that are expiring for millions of people under the Affordable Care Act, causing the insurance premiums to spike nationwide. Republicans have refused to negotiate and have encouraged Trump to steer clear of any talks. After convening a White House meeting this week with the Democratic leaders, the president posted a cartoonish fake video mocking the Democratic leadership that was widely viewed as unserious and racist. President Trump's behavior has become more erratic and unhinged, Democratic leaders Senator Chuck Schumer and Representative Hakeem Jeffries said in a joint statement, calling for an intervention to get the country out of the shutdown. Instead of negotiating a bipartisan agreement in good faith, he is obsessively posting crazed deepfake videos. Vice President J.D. Vance said Republicans want to resolve the health care issues that concern Democrats, but will not negotiate until the government opens. It's craziness, and people are going to suffer because of this, Vance said Wednesday on Fox News. What neither side has devised is an easy off-ramp to prevent what could become a protracted closure. The ramifications are certain to spread beyond the political arena, upending the lives of Americans who rely on the government for benefit payments, work contracts, and the many services being thrown into turmoil. An economic jolt could be felt in a matter of days. The government is expected Friday to produce its monthly jobs report, which may or may not be delivered. Wall Street veered toward losses before the opening bell Wednesday, as the government shutdown went into effect just after midnight. Across the government, preparations have begun. Trump's Office of Management and Budget, headed by Russ Voigt, directed agencies to execute plans not just for furloughs, which are typical during a federal funding lapse, but mass firings of federal workers. It's part of the Trump administration's mission, including its Department of Government Efficiency, to shrink the government. The Medicare and Medicaid health care programs are expected to continue, though staffing shortages could mean delays for some services. The Pentagon would still function, and most employees will stay on the job at the Department of Homeland Security. But Trump has warned that the administration could focus on programs that are important to Democrats, cutting vast numbers of people out, cutting things that they like, cutting programs that they like. As agencies sort out which workers are essential or not, Smithsonian museums are expected to stay open, at least until Monday. A group of former National Park superintendents urged the administration to close the parks to visitors, arguing that poorly staffed parks in a shutdown are a danger to the public and put park resources at risk. Ahead of Wednesday's start of the fiscal year, House Republicans had approved a temporary funding bill over opposition from Democrats to keep government running into mid-November while broader negotiations continue. But that bill has failed repeatedly in the Senate, including Wednesday. It requires 60 votes for approval, which requires cooperation between the two parties in the 53-47 GOP majority Senate. A Democratic bill also failed. Richland College. EEOC rules in favor of DEI director. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has ruled in favor of a former employee of Richland Community College. Jennifer Reichart, who was Richland's executive director of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and Title IX coordinator, accused the college and President Cristobal Valdez of discrimination on the basis of sex and retaliation for her opposition to that alleged discrimination. Her employment with the college was terminated on January 19, 2023. She had begun work on September 26, 2022. The way the EEOC works is about 97% of claims that ever get filed, they don't make a finding. But this is one that they did, said Reichert's attorney, David Fish. It indicates that she has an extremely strong case in the EEOC's view. The EEOC is responsible for enforcing federal laws that make it illegal to discriminate against a job applicant or an employee because of the person's race, color, religion, sex, including pregnancy, childbirth, or related conditions, transgender status and sexual orientation, national origin, age, 40 or older, disability, or genetic information. Reichert's official complaint says that Valdez told her on her first day of work that he had recently fired several employees, including the vice president of finance and operations, and that she learned later that the vice president had opposed Valdez's alleged misuse of funds. Other allegations in her complaint include an accusation that Valdez asked her to serve as faculty officer in an employee grievance filing, and when she found that the write-up was unwarranted and discriminatory, Valdez called her stupid. Other accusations in the complaint include that she received reports from countless female employees that Valdez was verbally abusive toward them. She charges that she was terminated in retaliation for emails using the terminology hostile work environment in regard to those incidents and because she is female. I have determined that the evidence obtained in the investigation establishes reasonable cause to believe that respondents discriminated against charging party based on her sex, female, and in retaliation for engaging in protected activity by subjecting her to harassment and discharging her in violation of Title VII, wrote Amrith Kaur Akre, District Director of the EEOC, in the letter dated September 16th. This determination is final. When the Commission finds that violations have occurred, it attempts to eliminate the alleged unlawful practices by informal methods of conciliation. Therefore, I invite the parties to join with the Commission in reaching a just resolution of this matter. Fish said the EEOC sent a copy of Reichert's complaint and their findings to Richland to give the college a chance to respond and offer a resolution. The college has 2 weeks to respond, but extensions are routinely granted on request. Fish said he is not aware of a response from Richland so far. If Richland refuses to respond, the next step is file a lawsuit, and the EEOC might also file a lawsuit, Fish said. We want Richland to stop discriminating and to fix the problems that it has. And yes, also part of it is monetary for my client's lost wages and what she went through. Those are the things EEOC will push Richland to do. Richland has not responded to requests for comment. Foot chase leads to gun charge by Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur man discovered the commotion on his front porch was caused by a fleeing gunman who was fighting to resist arrest and had just been shot in the back with a stun gun, a sworn affidavit says. The 42-year-old homeowner was quoted as telling officers he was more than happy to cooperate with them when he found out there was a lot of commotion going on his porch, according to the affidavit signed by Officer Ashlyn Busman. The homeowner said he complied because he did not want to be in the middle of a possible shootout. Police recovered a 9mm semi-automatic pistol from the porch, and the homeowner said it hadn't been there until the alleged gunman, Tyrell J. Woods, had dashed up the front steps, pursued by officers. Busman said the drama started just before 11 a.m. on September 23rd, after police patrols responded to 911 calls about shots fired in the area of East Main and North Illinois streets. A blue sedan had been seen roaring away from the area at a high rate of speed, and police gave chase. Woods was described as pulling onto the driveway of the homeowner's home in the 900 block of East Main Street and then bailing out. Busman said he refused commands to stop as he headed for the porch and shoved one officer out of the way before he was brought down by the shot from the stun gun. A 36-year-old female witness later came forward to say she had seen Woods with a firearm waving it around in the street in the 1100 block of East Main Street before police arrived to pursue his fleeing vehicle. Busman said a check of Woods' criminal record shows he has several previous convictions, including a 6.5-year sentence in 2019 for dealing cocaine, and isn't allowed to possess a gun. Woods was arraigned in Macon County Circuit Court on charges of the aggravated unlawful possession of a gun, two counts of the illegal possession of a firearm, and the aggravated battery of a peace officer. Judge Lindsay Shelton told Woods he was too dangerous to be granted pretrial release, and he is being held in the Macon County Jail. He is due back in court October 8th for a preliminary hearing when he will enter pleas to the charges. Southwest Illinois man wins jackpot. Commercial News, Chicago. A few favorite numbers and one winning ticket have turned an East St. Louis man into a multimillionaire overnight. I started playing lotto in January last year, and it quickly became my favorite game, said the winner, who has chosen to remain anonymous under the name East St. Louis Lotto Winner. When asked about the winning numbers, the winner simply stated, "They're my favorite numbers." It wasn't until the morning after the draw that the news really sunk in. I checked the Illinois Lottery's website to see who won and realized it was me. Of all the people, it was me. I cried because I was too shocked. The winning lotto ticket was purchased at Crown Mart, located at 306 East Broadway in East St. Louis. It matched all six numbers, 5, 9, 14, 18, 22, 23 in the August 25th lotto drawing to secure the $14,600,000 jackpot. As a reward for selling the winning ticket, the retailer will receive a $146,000 bonus, 1% of the prize amount. Looking ahead, the newly minted millionaire is filled with excitement and gratitude. "I just want to take care of my family, get a nice house, and drive a Lexus," the winner shared with a smile. "Paris is on my list too. I'm looking forward to sightseeing and taking it all in." Above all, the winner's biggest motivation is family. "My granddaughter's future is my priority, and I'm using this prize money to support their education and dreams." This is the largest Illinois Lotto jackpot won in 2025, surpassing a previous $10.4 million prize awarded on February 8th. So far this year, more than 4.8 million winning lotto tickets have been sold, with Illinois lottery players taking home over $47 million in prizes. Lotto is an Illinois-only game that is played three times a week on Monday, Thursday, and Saturday. Tickets for the game can be purchased in-store, online, or on the Illinois Lottery app. For more information or to buy tickets online, please visit illinoislottery.com. Immigration, Chicago. Bike chase, crazy moment. ICE agents' downtown pursuit of cyclist seen as surreal movie scene. By Tess Kenny, Chicago Tribune, Chicago. Patrick Gilmore was on his way to the Clark Lake CTA train station with a friend Sunday afternoon when they came across a line of federal immigration agents near the Dearborn Street Bridge downtown and unexpectedly stumbled onto a viral moment. As Gilmore waited to cross the street, a cyclist approached, taunted the agents, and, after a brief exchange, jetted off west along Wacker Drive as agents chased after him. Gilmore, 25, recalled in a recent interview with the Tribune. "Those moments, captured on video, garnered widespread attention online, felt surreal," Gilmore said. "It just felt like we were in an actual movie," he said. On North Michigan Avenue, from Tribune Tower to Millennium Park, dozens of federal immigration agents were seen patrolling downtown Chicago on Sunday afternoon. The federal presence, which even included U.S. Customs and Border Protection boats on the Chicago River, was widely filmed and circulated on social media, including, and especially, the footage Gilmore watched unfold in real time. The viral video has been the subject of numerous articles online, from the New York Post to BuzzFeed, and racked up millions of views and thousands of likes, reposts, and comments. The 18-second clip, captured and posted on X by Christopher Sweat, shows a cyclist in a brown jacket approaching agents at the northeast corner of Dearborn and Wacker, then quickly dashing away as agents start to pursue him. 7 seconds into the clip, the cyclist is seen hopping on his bike and pedaling away down Wacker with agents trailing behind. In a longer version of the video, viewed by the Tribune, the cyclist, before the chase, is seen repeatedly calling out, "I'm not a U.S. citizen," and "Come on," to agents. The cyclist then appears to drop something, after which an agent is heard saying, "You dropped your phone." As the cyclist goes to pick up his phone, agents start their pursuit. Asked about the exchange, a U.S. Department of Homeland Security spokesperson wrote in an emailed statement, "Midway Blitz was launched to remove the worst of the worst criminal illegal aliens, including murderers, rapists, gang members, pedophiles, and terrorists from Chicago communities. Under President Trump and Secretary Noem, nowhere is a safe haven for criminal illegal aliens," the statement continued. "If you come to our country illegally and break our laws, we will hunt you down, arrest you, deport you, and you will never return." "It was a crazy moment," Gilmore of Lakeview said. "Like, wow, this is the world we're living in today. Politics aside, it was just really crazy to be around." Gilmore, who's from New Jersey, but has lived in Chicago for 3 years, was downtown Sunday to grab lunch with a friend from college who was in town. After lunch, Gilmore walked his friend back to his River North Hotel before he was set to grab a train to O'Hare International Airport, Gilmore said. Walking through downtown, they ran into a large group of federal immigration agents. Just after 2 p.m., he and his friend found themselves at the Dearborn Street Bridge. Gilmore said the cyclist repeatedly told the agents he wasn't an American citizen. At first, the agents didn't engage. Then one agent asked the cyclist to clarify what he was saying, Gilmore said. In brief, how to give to the WSOY food drive, Decatur. The success of the WSOY community food drive rests with the generosity of others. Here are the ways you can donate to the event set for Friday, October 3rd, at the Airport Plaza Kroger on US 36 in Decatur. Non-perishable food and monetary donations can be dropped off at the Kroger from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Don't want to make the trek to the Kroger? Several options exist to make monetary donations now through 6 p.m. Friday. To donate, text WSOY to 26989. Venmo at UW Decatur. Donate online through United Way website. Mail donations to United Way, 201 West El Dorado, Decatur, Illinois, 62522. Care of WSOY Food Drive. Milliken Theater show preview at 6 p.m. Wednesday. Decatur. Milliken University School of Theater and Dance and Decatur Area Arts Council have teamed up to offer a preview of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, a musical comedy. The preview will be held 6 p.m. Wednesday, October 8th, at the Madden Arts Center, 125 North Water Street. A brief question and answer session and an interactive game with the audience and cast will follow the preview. To register, visit the Decatur Area Arts Council Facebook page. Members receive free entry and non-members are asked for a $5 donation. Regular performances are scheduled for October 16th through 19th at the Virginia Rogers Theater at Milliken University, with shows at 7:30 p.m. Thursday and Friday, October 16th and 17th, and 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, October 18th and 19th. Tickets cost $25 and are on sale now at milliken.universitytickets.com. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review dated Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. Please stay tuned.